This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Homeowners associations are a relatively modern invention. They came about to create certain neighborhood standards in an effort to maintain property values and to give a sense of uniform expectations to homeowners. In neighborhoods with HOAs, homeowners agree to those expectations by signing covenants at the time of the sale. In addition to the expectations listed, there are also a list of penalties for failing to hold up your end of the bargain. And, of course, homeowners are expected to support the association monetarily. Yet recently, some homeowners were upset to learn their properties had been foreclosed on because of a failure to pay their HOA dues. And that is just one example of the kind of infraction that can bring penalties, some severe. And last week, the conversation went all the way to the state legislature. So are HOAs protectors of property values or organizations of neighborhood bullies running wild with power? We look into that this hour, and we hear from, I guess, both sides of the conversation and examine the penalties and relationship between homeowners and HOAs. We're joined by John Stone, president and CEO of Community Association Services. He has over 16 years' experience managing all types of single-family, townhome, condominium, and timeshare associations, and he joins us by phone from Raleigh. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you with us. Jim Lane is here with us in our Spirit Square studio and is the founder of the North Carolina Homeowners Association Laws Coalition. By trade, he is a general consultant in property management and does not take sides on this issue, I'm told now. Welcome.
Good morning.
And we welcome back our returning champion. He was on the program just yesterday, Dr. David Swindell, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNC Charlotte and Director of UNCC's PhD in Public Policy Program. This is actually public policy that we're talking about here.
Yes, it is. This time it is.
And in the interest of full disclosure, he sits on the board of directors of a homeowners association. Do you take sides in this?
No, I'm not here to do that today.
Okay. Let's start with a better definition of the two people we have here who are associated with groups. We have represented here by Jim Lane and John Stone. John, what is Community Association Services?
We're a management company, and we manage homeowner associations and condominium associations.
But not here in Charlotte?
Not in Charlotte.
Okay.
Our offices range from Winston-Salem to Wilmington. We have about 225 associations. About 40,000 individual owners.
Now, do you actually run these homeowners organizations, or do you simply advise and consult them?
No, that's a great question. The board of directors of the homeowner associations that are elected by their peers, by the homeowners, are responsible for running the governing the association. We are hired by the board of directors. Serve at the pleasure of the board of directors and provide the business functions to the association, such as accounting and contracting with services and enforcement of covenants and so forth.
Is that not unlike what you do in your professional life, Jim?
It is similar. I am more of a consultant. What John does is to provide the services to the board of directors under contract with the respective HOA.
Okay.
What I do is more to consult with property management. I'm a licensed real estate broker and been a consultant for 20 years in this industry.
Okay, but you're also the founder of the North Carolina Homeowners Association Laws Coalition, and I take it that's an advocacy group to protect homeowners against what you view as abuses on the part of many HOAs, true or false?
True.
Okay. On your website, you are asking, and I quote here, legislative leaders to appoint a task force of homeowners to recommend and to lead the reforms needed to stop the degradation of HOA communities and to bring training, licensing, and fair and positive oversight of HOAs where there is none today. You say you don't take sides. That sounds to me like you're taking sides.
My side is the homeowner.
So you do take sides.
No, I don't take sides because HOAs were formed originally. Actually, they're formed by developers. To build a community, and the HOA is there to protect the community. So there really is only one side, and that side is the homeowner and the protection of the community. What has happened over 20 years, and this is a nationwide effort. We have people contributing to our website from as far away as Arizona, mm-hmm. Minnesota, Florida, Maryland. So it's a nationwide issue. There are 18,000 HOAs in the state of North Carolina. By some estimates, as much as 55% of our residents who own a home live in an HOA. What has happened, and I use the word degradation because it truly has degraded to the point that people are now taking sides, where there is no side. The side is, what are we doing to best operate, build, and live in our communities? And the Planned Community Act, which is a legislation by the state, helps to create and to somewhat control, but not to regulate.
So back up. People who are living under these HOAs, you say, are taking sides, and there is no side.
Well, what's
I don't understand that.
Yeah, okay. What has happened is, if I wanted to plant a flower in my yard, I'd have to get permission under some bylaws and some regulations. Mm-hmm. What has happened, and I use the word degrade, because it has degraded to the point where a board of directors, under the powers given to them by our legislation, by the state, can in fact regulate what we do in our communities, mm-hmm. such as planting flowers.
But you knew that
trees.
Going in.
Part of the issue from homeowners is, no, I didn't know that.
How can you not?
Because here's a stack of documents, and your readers can't see it.
We have listeners here, although they do read.
Yeah, we have listeners.
It's an inch thick.
It's an inch thick.
Yeah.
This is what would be required under the New Disclosure Act, the new disclosure document, which is required.
So that's what homeowners buying a new house in one of these neighborhoods would have to read through to understand what was required?
They would have to, by the new legislation, read this prior to making an offer to purchase.
Dr. Swindell, this is where the public policy part of this comes in, I guess, and you're kind of wearing double hats here because you do serve on an HOA board. Mm-hmm. Why would it be that complicated and complex? Why would any government put that kind of onerous, I don't even know how to put this, on prospective homeowners when they go to closing or when they go to buy a house? Have so much stuff to read, and it's
exactly.
All legalese anyway, that they can't possibly digest or retain the information. So why would they do that to them?
I think it's a reaction to the fact that right now, or previously rather, homeowners would receive this information at signing. So they're there signing off on the mortgage to take possession of the new home. They're excited.
And at that point, and I've been in that position several mm-hmm. times, and I've been in that position when a mistake was made leading up, a large monetary mistake.
That happens.
I had to get up from the signing and go to the bank and get the money.
At that point,
you're kind of locked in. You've already
exactly.
moved out of your other house.
Exactly.
So
it happens late in the process when you get this information.
Okay, so
and
go ahead.
So you're signing all that stack of papers for all the different pieces of paperwork that you need to do to close on the house, and there's this document that includes your covenants for your homeowner association.
Right.
Go ahead and read those real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty cumbersome in a signing like that. So a lot of people just sign off without really looking at what they're signing. They've signed a contract with their fellow homeowners in the division in which they're preparing to move.
Why aren't these types of things revealed when you tour the home, when you're looking for homes to buy?
Well, I think that's what the legislature has done now, is to try to react to that and perhaps overreact to some extent with the amount of information, but trying to force a disclosure of these covenants prior to closing on the home so that the homeowner has a reasonable amount of time to digest more clearly what it is that they're getting into.
John Stone, when in neighborhoods that you're involved with around the state, when these covenants are in existence, are they in legal language or are they in a language that people can understand, and are the key provisions highlighted in any way so that there's a shorthand way of reading through these documents?
No, there's not a shorthand provision of any type, and they're easy to understand if you're a lawyer. it's a valid point, but those covenants are written before the very first lot is sold, and they are a matter of the public record. And it sort of spells out the the constitution of the association, what the association is going to be responsible for, and and how the association functions. There's also two other set of legal documents. There's articles of incorporation as well as the bylaws, and all those combined provide the operating documents, the legal documents.
Now, you said something interesting. You said something interesting, John, and that is that these documents are written before the first home is sold. And it seems to me that homeowners associations are just that. If there are no homeowners, why does the association and its covenants and bylaws exist? Why isn't that something that the homeowners decide on once there are people living in the houses?
Yeah, no, great question. The reason for that is before you buy into a community, you want to know what it's all about. You know, once you move in, if these documents are then created, it's too late. If there's a restriction against rentals in that community or a common restriction is commercial vehicles, if you're a professional truck driver, you need to know before you move into that community that you're not going to be allowed to park your truck in your driveway.
One of the things about that I would add is that when people start talking about sides on this issue, one of the sides that was frequently forgotten, it's not just the homeowners, but to really remember that the developers who are coming into these areas to build these large-scale developments are homeowners. They are corporate homeowners, but they're the ones who are building the homes, and so they establish the whole modus operandi behind why they establish these particular kinds of associations is to protect their investment in a large-scale development. And so they will a lot of this is boilerplate language that appears in these covenants. They'll put this in place so that they know that as people move in, they're going to be held to certain standards so that protects the value of the other homes in the development that haven't yet sold.
Is this a selling point? Is this viewed as a selling point by developers?
By developers,
yeah.
Yes, by developers it is. I would ask every homeowner who looks into a community, read the covenants and restrictions. They are very, very one-sided. They're one-sided. And here I will address the issue of sides. The typical CCRs and bylaws are drafted.
A CCR is what?
The covenants, conditions, and restrictions. Okay. The things that tell you whether you can paint your house pink or have a truck parked in the driveway.
Okay.
Those are written by the developer with an attorney and are 100% in favor of the developer.
Well, the developer's out of the picture once all the homes are sold.
No.
Hang on a second. The developer for conventionally financed association, the majority of associations, any association that has FHA or VA loans, the developer goes through transition from developer to homeowner control when about 75% of the lots are sold. I mean, that's generally the provision, and that's in the covenants. And the design for that is so that the developer is still around and has a substantial investment in the community when it transitions from developer control to a democratically elected homeowner association board of directors. So, you know, the developer, it is a selling point. We're sort of assuming here that the majority of people that move into homeowner associations don't want these protective covenants. I think the majority of people move into homeowner associations because they do want something in place that will protect their property value.
They like to look at the name, right?
Yeah. And I think we all agree.
Associations exist for common ownership of common area. You know.
Okay, and with that we have to stop. We'll come back and talk more about this in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Northeastern University, hosting an on-campus information session Wednesday, February 8th at noon. Information at northeastern.edu/Charlotte. Well, sometimes things look just fine on the surface, but when you look a little deeper, you start to see some problems, and that's true. Obviously, it's true with people, but it's also true with our oceans. Dr. John Bender studies the geography of the ocean floor and has also contributed to larger studies on the health of our oceans. And what he sees is not a rosy picture, and the threats, all of them critical, come from a variety of sources. We'll talk about them with Dr. Bender tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm show, the Pentagon has proposed shrinking its budget by $500 billion over 10 years. Spending cuts, fewer troops, and a shift in U.S. defense strategy.
Join the Diane Rehm show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about homeowners associations today with Jim Lane, founder of North Carolina Homeowners Association Laws Coalition, John Stone, president and CEO of Community Association Services. They work with you work with management companies, is that correct?
We are a management company
that works with homeowners associations. Okay. And Dr. David Swindell, Associate Professor of Political Science and Director of the PhD in Public Policy Program at UNC Charlotte. Let's go back to something we were talking about just prior to the break, and that these bylaws in these homeowners association covenants are written entirely to the benefit of the developer. The developer at some point is going to walk away from all of this. When all the lots are sold and all the people have bought the houses, the developer has moved on. So then, if what was to benefit the developer, does it not transition to benefit the homeowner and the homeowners association? It's the same rules, the same bylaws that everybody agreed to when they bought their homes. Why does the benefit not then transfer to those folks?
Well, they're inheriting a structure, a kind of a legal structure within which they have to operate, and whether or not they were, obviously they were not part and parcel of the development of those rules. So, yes, they take over at that point, and they can change the rules, but the mechanism for changing those rules is really onerous in terms of the supermajorities that are necessary to.
Which shouldn't it be?
Because
everybody signed to get in.
Just like our Constitution, that's the argument, is that this should not be done willy-nilly because people are making very large-scale personal investments in their homes. And so if they're changing the rules of the association because, well, purple is now in style, then that may not be a good basis upon which somebody wants to make an investment in a neighborhood. That's the counterargument.
And, Jim, you disagreed with that when I asked shouldn't they be onerous. You said no. You shook your head.
Yeah, I shook my head for two reasons. One is most homeowners don't even read these documents before they buy their home.
But that's their fault.
Well, they don't even know about them. And so
how can that be? If they either see them at closing or they see them when the real estate agent takes them to them. Every single time that I've been to a community that had an HOA, I was handed the covenants when I saw the house.
Prior to January 1st, you were not required to be given that. You had a good real estate agent.
Okay. I'm sorry, John.
Well, I would say 20 years ago, you could make the argument that people moved into homeowner associations and couldn't spell HOA, didn't know what it was, didn't know what they were getting into. I don't think you make that argument anymore. I mean, from what I can tell, there's 16,000 homeowner associations in North Carolina. About half of our population lives in an association. You're getting second and third generation owners where they move in to an association. They know what's happening the second time around. And when it comes to townhome and condominium associations, I just don't think you'd make that argument at all. I mean, it's got to be obvious.
John, can I make an
exterior of those units?
John, sure. I'd like to make a comment. I was the first of 55 speakers in Raleigh this last Monday, a week ago. And I asked, as the first of 55 speakers, to show of hands, how many are in favor and have no issue with their HOA? About 40% of 150 people raised their hands. Mike Hunter, in the recent column in the Charlotte Observer, quotes it as a 50-50 split. Of the people that spoke, the 60% that represented concerns, the number one issue was, I didn't know about this. Yeah, I should have. Shame on me, but I didn't.
Well, ignorance of the law is no excuse.
That's correct. And so we have asked the legislature now to do is to take the CCRs and the bylaws at the time the developer turns the community over to the community. What we're asking the legislature to do is to take a look at a law that would void, literally void the CCRs as they existed and as they were prepared by the developer, and to give the homeowners the rights to enact, if they so choose, a different set of CCRs and bylaws that truly represents the homeowners.
Would this be going forward or looking backward?
Going forward.
Going forward. So so that means that anything that you're handed at closing by a developer or at looking at it as a real estate agent takes you through the house means nothing. It's meaningless because it's going to be voided.
No, not that it's meaningless. In a community today, if you buy into an existing community today, by law, as of January 1st, you have to be given these documents before you make an offer to purchase. In the past, you didn't have to be given those until closing, when it really literally was too late.
Too late, yeah.
The two things. One.
Well, let me make sure I understand. So you're saying that when it goes through developer transition, then the homeowners would get together and they'd come up with a new set of covenants based on what they wanted.
But not in the sense of just haphazardly, but to have a...
No, I understand. But, I mean, it's an interesting concept, but...
But what we're proposing... What we've proposed to the legislature is let the community get together with a set of, if you will, pre-approved boilerplate kind of CCRs and bylaws that are clearly written for the community and not for the developer. Because at the time the developer turns it over, it's no longer a development community. It's a homeowner's community.
If these things are written for the developer, they're obviously written so that the developer can point to these things and say, this is why you would want to buy a home here as opposed to over there, correct?
That's why his not the developer, the sales agent, the builder's sales agent. Let's be clear.
Hold on, stop. Everybody stop. I have to get this point straight because everybody's saying that you're saying, Jim, that these are written for the benefit of the developer. The developer doesn't have a horse in this race other than selling the houses that he's built.
No, the developer sells lots to a builder. The builder is the one that sells the home.
Okay,
let's
put them together. Builders and developers. They're in this for the money.
This is
an investment that they're making in a large scale, usually a planned unit development, and they're looking to get a big return on their investment.
Correct. And the reasons, if these covenants exist for the benefit of the builders and developers, it must be because they see this as a sales point that would make you want to buy in this neighborhood as opposed to the neighborhood across the street.
It's both a sales point as well as a way to protect the investment that they're making into that development in the sense that they want to make sure that the neighbors who do move in while it's still under development are not going to do things that are going to lower the property value of the property surrounding the ones that they've already bought.
Okay, so if it's a sales tool, if it's a plus, if it attracts people to that neighborhood, then haven't they agreed just by default? By the fact that they bought the house because they were told that you can't paint your house pink and you can't have tires painted white in the front yard?
Which goes back to an earlier point. It's the devil's in the details of these the CCRs, and people will sign them. They may know about them, people are aware that they have signed CCRs and that they're in an HOA, but if
they don't know about them, then there is no benefit to the developer.
No, I meant the buyer, the home buyer.
That's what I'm saying. If they don't know about them, then there's no. Then the developer and the builder have not publicized them enough to make them a selling point.
No. They know about the HOA. They don't know the details of the CCRs with regards to color schemes, planting flowers, truck regulations, or anything like that. Yeah. They don't know the details within that. They know, this is an HOA, so it's a protected community. We're not going to have goofy behaviors.
Yeah, Mr. Collins?
Yes, go ahead.
For one thing, I'm impressed we're talking about developers when there virtually are none these days.
That's right. this is a conversation.
This is a conversation that should have been held
in 2006.
If I understand Mr. Kane's proposal, I mean, it's interesting and it's a creative idea. But the problem, I think, is this. You have people that move into communities because there are certain restrictions in place. And if you're going to wait till the developer transitions out, and by the way, the only thing I see in covenants that's strictly written to favor the developer is they have complete and total control of the association until they go through developer transition. And at that point, they kind of move from the form of government changes from a benevolent dictatorship to a democracy when you elect your fellow homeowners to the board of directors. That seems to be the thing that's really written in favor of developers. These restrictions and the appointment of an architectural review committee to approve additions to houses and so forth, I mean, you wouldn't even be able to count the number of lawsuits you'd have coming out of associations if everybody's going to get in and undo things that were in place before that, you know, when they bought their home.
Now, Jim Lane is go ahead.
Yeah, and we were talking about sides earlier. That's an interesting way to look at it. I tend to look at it more that associations are, you know, it's a very personal relationship that you have with people you don't know because it involves your home. Particularly with the townhomes and condos, it's sort of like the closer you live to your neighbor, the more rules you have and the more restrictive covenants there usually are. But it's just associations are just a good mix for having conflict. And I think what we need to talk about is recognize that we're going to have conflict and how we deal with that conflict.
Well, that's why we're having this conversation, is it not, this morning? Because, I mean, if you look at your website, Jim, it is full of questions about conflict. In fact, you ask on your website, do you have an HOA board that is more focused on its own power to levy fines and to create restrictions than on serving the community for its common good and to enrich homeowner lifestyles and protect property values? That indicates to me that either you're hearing or you've experienced or you know of many situations where the people who are running the homeowners association, the elected body of officials that the homeowners have elected, become mad with power in some cases.
Absolutely.
Well, not absolutely.
And I would let me back up, and then I would like to address that. I've had a real estate license in this state since 1993. I have never in that period of time used the CCRs in the bylaws of an HOA to try to sell somebody on a home. In fact, I just talked to the four largest real estate companies in the Huntersville area, and three out of four of them have said, no, you're absolutely right. We never use that as an issue. What we use are other tools, and the fact that they have to sign it in an HOA, oh, yeah, we deal with that as part of the required documents. In fact, we're getting people calling us saying, don't you dare show me a home in an HOA. Because the publicity has gotten out there now. The people are concerned.
That's difficult not to do, isn't it? And obviously, there's not a lot of building going on now. But as I understand the law, the North Carolina Planned Community Act, which is what governs all this and allows all this to it came into being January 1st, 1999. And it applies to any development that contains more than 20 lots, correct?
Correct.
So that means going forward, if you're going to build 21 lots, it's going to have an HOA.
Right.
So you're not going to get around this.
Having an HOA, let's get back to the original point. HOAs are for homeowners to protect their investments.
Right.
They are not for a board of directors to decide who can plant something in their yard.
Well, then how do you protect the investment?
Well, the nature of the CCR.
Wait a minute, John. Let me finish a second. Sure.
The HOA documents, as they're written by the developer, written before the first home is ever purchased, are there to protect the economic viability of the builder and developer. The homes are sold to people by home builders primarily, and their sales agents, who generally are not licensed real estate agents. And they're sold based on the beauty of the home, the beauty of the community, the fact that there's a swimming pool, a clubhouse, da-da-da-da-da, and never, seldom, are the details, as David has said, the devil is in the details. The people buy the home because they like the home. Yeah, it happens to be in a community because that's the only way you can buy one. And as somebody said to me the other day, if you want to buy this home, sign here. So it's a condition of buying the home that they sign the CCRs and the documents, not even knowing why. And it isn't until they get a nasty note. We had, in our community, 1,700 violation letters sent out to 400 homes by a board that is abusive. And that's the main issue here.
These are Democratic. Everybody wants to talk. So, John, you were first, and David, we'll come to you.
Okay. I think one statement Mr. Kane made, I misunderstood, but did you say that the boards weren't in existence to tell people what they could plant in their yard, or that was an abuse of their authority to do that?
I'm not saying it's abuse of the literal authority given to them by the laws, but it is an abuse of being a neighbor. We've gotten to the point where it's litigation against neighbor rather than knocking on a door and saying, hey, As your neighbor, would you mind doing something? No, we don't get that. We get a violation letter and a $100 fine and a threat of foreclosure.
Is there nothing in the HOA Hold on, John. Is there nothing in HOA covenants to allow for back and forth between the homeowner and the people they have elected to be their leaders in this homeowners association? David.
Well, different associations are structured differently. There's variation. And in many of them, what happens is that there will be first a neighborly contact. There will be somebody who says, well, you know, those your tree is growing over my fence. Can we take care of that? And, you know, 9 out of 10 times, that's going to take care of it. Most of this conflict can be resolved very amicably. The homeowner associations typically get involved when that can't be. It's the 1 in 10 times that the homeowners associations tend to get involved. Of those situations, there are some where there have been cases of abuse where the association leaders have become overly aggressive or perceived to be overly aggressive, mm-hmm. and that's, of course, the squeaky wheel that's getting the attention right now.
Okay. John Stone.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think one thing we can all agree on is that from time to time you're going to have out-of-control boards of directors. With homeowner associations that make bad decisions, the same as you have out of control
city councils,
school boards, and city councils.
Well, I was going to ask: is there any real difference between HOAs and how they create rules and how they enforce those rules and how you regulate the people who are creating and enforcing the rules and a city council or a county commission, which is also an elected body by the people who are going to have to live by what they decide? Is there any difference?
I think there is, and I think the difference is this. These homeowner associations are, by and large, nonprofit corporations. They're governed by the Planned Community Act. They're also governed by the North Carolina Nonprofit Corporation Act, which I think is 55A. They may look and feel like municipalities, but they're not. I mean, it's not the same thing. They're not subject to the same laws in North Carolina.
Correct.
The thing they share in common with these city councils is they are governed by the democratic process. And if you have an abusive board of directors, I mean, if you've got a board that's sending out 1,600 violation notices to 400 owners, I think that'd be a right lively annual meeting the following year.
Should be.
And I can't imagine they're not going to be kicked out of office. There's also a provision in these bylaws to recall boards. I mean, and I've seen that from time to time.
Now, Jim Lane a moment ago mentioned Michael Hunter, who wrote an article in The Observer on January 28th on Saturday. He's a Charlotte attorney who represents community and condominium associations for Horak Tally. And he writes, on rare occasions, I have encountered HOA board members who are corrupt or egotistical, abusing their position of authority, pursuing vendettas and personal agendas, and making their neighbors' lives miserable. Such people are the exception. On the other hand, I have found that often the most vocal critics of HOAs are people who bought a home in an HOA-controlled community without understanding the ramifications, or people who simply refuse to follow the rules and standards of the community. I'll give you a chance to respond to that when we come back. We have to take a break. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Ortho Carolina, orthopedic care for sports-specific injuries from the Little League to the Big Leagues, tennis elbow to ACL repair. OrthoCarolina.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the Pentagon has proposed shrinking its budget by $500 billion over 10 years, spending cuts, fewer troops, and a shift in U.S. defense strategy. The topic at 10 o'clock, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, Adam Johnson, the novelist, talks about his new novel, The Orphan Master's Son. If you'd like to join our conversation about HOAs, now's the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks, and we are coming right back.
The American economy can't quite make up its mind. There's Nebraska doing pretty well.
I think we see just a general unwillingness to bite off more than you can chew.
And there's Nevada, not doing so well.
If you have a basically resourceless state and you're desperate, you're going to take more risk.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Two States and the Story of Election 2012, The Real Economy. Marketplace's special coverage next time. It's from APM, American Public Media.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 FM WFAE.
Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about homeowners associations today with John Stone, President and CEO of Community Association Services, Jim Lane, founder of North Carolina HOA Laws Coalition, and Dr. David Swindell, who is on an HOA board and is also the director of the PhD in Public Policy Program at UNC Charlotte, and that this is public policy. And I quoted two paragraphs from an article this Saturday in the Charlotte Observer by Michael Hunter that talked about there were only rare occasions in which people are experiencing corrupt, power-hungry boards, and that most of the complaints come from people who didn't read the HOA covenants or weren't aware of them in some way. John Stone has supplied me a document detailing a Zogby survey, which has found in 2005, 2007, and again in 2009, 71% of community association residents say they are satisfied with their association experience. 89% of association residents believe their governing boards strive to serve the best interests of the community. 76% of association residents say their community manager provides value and support to residents and the association as a whole. 70% of association residents say association rules protect and enhance property value. So why are we having this conversation? Why are you upset, Jim?
Why am I upset?
Yeah.
It's not me. It's the 60% of the people that were in Raleigh this week. You're quoting something from a number of years
60%
ago.
60% of how many people?
About 150.
So is that a lot of people?
Well, the point is, if we take, will we tolerate one murder? Will we tolerate one rape? Will we tolerate one foreclosure because somebody planted flowers? Mike Hunter filed a foreclosure to do so.
Let's talk about that, because that's really John, go ahead.
Well, there's two things. I think the foreclosure is a real important issue, but, you know, the House Select Committee that had that hearing last week, you know, they didn't just discover homeowner associations a couple of weeks ago. There was a House Select Committee a year ago. There were 8 bills introduced into the General Assembly this past year that dealt directly with homeowner associations. So there's a lot of activity there. But, you know, Representative Earle, who's from Mecklenburg County, back in 2005, introduced House Bill 1541 that had some major revisions. I guess the first major revisions to the Planned Community Act since it was introduced back in 99. And one of them dealt with foreclosures. And there's an aspect of that which I really like. I think good things came out of the House Select Committee's bill last year. I think some good things will come out of the bill of that committee this year. But Beverly Earle changed the foreclosure provision where, you know, if someone owes dues, it's an administrative foreclosure, and it's conducted with the clerk of court's office, and it's pretty perfunctory procedural foreclosure. But if there's a foreclosure for anything other than assessments, homeowner dues, for example, a fine for planting flowers, that has to be a judicial foreclosure, which means both parties are going to end up in front of a superior court judge, and he's going to determine whether the board of directors is reasonable or not.
Let's talk about this foreclosure thing for a second, because one of the reasons that this hearing started was because, a person at that hearing testified that an HOA foreclosed on a homeowner who owed $50. $50. How widespread, David, is this kind of penalty?
It's not that widespread. First off, homeowner association.
Is that an abuse of power?
Well, and there are select cases of this abuse of power, absolutely. But it's a small number. I mean, the vast majority of HOAs are out there doing their thing, and they've got very motivated and good-hearted volunteers who are serving on these boards, trying to do the best they can. They're not truly elected public officials, but they're trying to do the best they can.
But they are. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that these are driven by a different set of requirements, our expectations of them serving as people there to enforce a set of rules that sometimes they'll have the professional assistance of a property management firm, but sometimes they're literally just the board. Mm-hmm. And it's in those situations, which just a board, that you typically see these kinds of abuses happening far more often than not.
Why would somebody write into a covenant that for $50, for failing to pay a $50 assessment or $50 dues, that you can be foreclosed on?
It's not that it says once you reach the $50 threshold, you're going to be foreclosed on. It's you have failed to meet your requirements as a homeowner.
Okay, what kind of infractions, on average, can be used for an association to foreclose on a homeowner's home?
Anything in arrears.
Meaning assessments,
you,
dues.
You mean what dollar amount?
No, you mentioned planting flowers can get you foreclosed on. So what are the things that can be used to foreclose on you?
Great question. And if somebody out there is foreclosing because a homeowner owns $50, everybody loses in that scenario.
Yeah, homeowner associations don't.
Because, you know, when you foreclose, it's not like you're taking the house and you're going to profit from that. Right. You know, it's still subject to the original deed of trust. So if you're foreclosing for $50, you know, it would have to be an extraordinary circumstance for that to make sense. The only people that's going to benefit would be, you know.
So answer my question. The question was, John, stop. The question was, what can cause you to be foreclosed on?
Gotcha. Well, the only other situation you can foreclose is to collect a fine. And a fine, there's a procedure in the Planned Community Act for that. Mm-hmm. If someone, you know, has a unapproved architectural change to their house, I saw Dr. Swindell's presentation at the General Assembly a couple of weeks ago, and the Hello Kitty house is a great example. I mean, that's not helping anybody's property values. But before you can assess, you can't just go and book the fine and start foreclosing. There's a hearing. There's a juratory panel that is either the board of directors or it's appointed by the board of directors. The homeowner goes to the hearing, and the goal there is to try to work it out.
Usually when you start that process, it started, you know, neighborly. There are warnings for delinquent dues or that something has been – something's out of compliance. Ultimately, if there's no response, then there's a lien that's placed on it. Usually there's plenty of opportunities, shots across the
valley.
And
this is all spelled out legally.
By state
law, not just the homeowners association.
There's the state
rules.
Law as well as the homeowner association law. And those,
what if
the
you
state
own the home outright?
If you own the home outright.
You don't have a mortgage.
You can lose your home.
They can just take it away from you?
A lien filed in court, Superior Court, they'll take your home.
Yeah, but somebody's not going to let you foreclose and take their home if they have equity in it. And this cannot happen in a vacuum. There's notification requirements. If it's a foreclosure to collect the fine, you're going to end up before a judge, and the judge is going to make a determination whether the board's being reasonable or not. The judge is going to look at it, and if they're trying to foreclose to collect the fine over planting a couple of flowers in your backyard, I don't think the association's going to win that lawsuit.
Well, that is exactly what happened in Mecklenburg County.
You want to expand on that?
Mike Hunter filed a foreclosure for planting flowers. And it went to court.
Was it successful?
It's still in court.
Okay. We have a lot of people who have emailed us, Facebooked us, and are on the phone wanting to talk about this. So we'll take some phone calls and fit a few of these in, and I'll share with you some of these comments we're getting on email. Let's begin with Ben. Welcome, Ben.
Good morning, everyone. I wanted to discuss disclosure among all the other topics that you've raised. These are secret organizations. Their books are secret. Their court filings are secret. All the fines and complaints they processed are secret. Their motions practice is secret. When you go to buy a house in a community, you can't look and see what they've been doing. And if you can't read the record, you have no disclosure. Second, the power to fine is not contained in the four corners of the covenant in many cases. Most, perhaps, we don't know. The power to fine has only one signature on it, and that's the signature of the governor. This is state power being played out in secret courts with private prejudice. And they were not founded for the interests of the developer or the homeowners. These associations, these neighborhood associations, date back to the days when neighborhoods were redlining ethnic minorities. And I'm not sure, but why would you be keeping all these secrets if there wasn't a great deal to hide?
Okay, Dr. Swindell, respond to that, because you're both a Homeowners Association board member and you're an expert on public policy.
We, from our perspective, our homeowner association, we are, minutes are public. There's the budget's public. This is, we want people to participate.
Is that the case everywhere? Because I've read this elsewhere.
You're supposed to have these minutes.
Supposed to. There's nothing in the law that says they must be transparent?
The nonprofit.
There is.
Yeah, the nonprofit corporation, the governing laws over nonprofit corporations speak to this. But the what happens, again, you're dealing with a lot of these volunteer organizations that just they're not really up to speed on Robert's Rules of Order, and they're not taking really
What's a homeowner's recourse when they feel, like Ben obviously feels, that their association is not being transparent, that they have no other way around, they can't find out? There's a lot of fiduciary irresponsibility alleged in some of these cases because no one knows where the money is or how it's being used because the books aren't open. They should be open. But if they're not, what's your recourse?
There is none.
You can't go to court?
No, Mike, you can. It will cost you $15,000 to $20,000 to fight a $500 fine. You cannot go to the Attorney General's office. They will not accept. Will not accept because the legislature won't allow them to accept a complaint from a homeowner against their HOA.
And then there's the question of retaliation that I've also read a lot about, that if you want to press this issue, an issue, whatever that issue may be, that you, particularly if you are dealing with an abusive board, that they will retaliate against you. Dr. Swindell?
There have been cases of that, absolutely, because, again, we're dealing with neighbors, human beings, and they're volunteers in large part. So if somebody takes umbrage with some of the decisions that they made, many of them will take it personally. But it's not personal. We, you know, when we're having our hearings for fines or whatever that in our association, it's not. These are our neighbors, and we don't want to be in that situation. No one wants to be in that situation, but you know.
Mike, can I make a comment? I've been on the board for 10 years. This is Jim Layton, and I'm here for the homeowner. It's really the makeup of the board that makes an HOA successful. It's the individuals, the personalities, the desire of those people on the board. Mm-hmm. If you get stuck with a board that re-elects themselves, and that happens through the abusive use of proxies, you get an abusive board, and they stay on the board, and they ruin the community.
But doesn't that come down to the fact that if you live in a neighborhood that has an HOA, you must participate?
And that's the biggest problem, apathy, absolute apathy. 20%, Carolyn Justice asked at the hearing last week, how many people show up at meetings? And the general response was less than 20%.
Okay.
There's absolute apathy by homeowners.
Ben, thank you for your call. Let me go to Brian in Charlotte. Brian, go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I will agree with the one guy who's talking about the lack of control over the HOAs. I don't know.
It's hard to keep them straight, isn't it?
Well, I'm currently in court over my HOA. Had to take it to allow them to foreclose on me to get in front of a judge because it's the only option left. It's absolutely ridiculous. I contacted the DA and the Attorney General as well, and we hired an attorney, and just like the one gentleman said, we paid him $3,000, and then to take it to the next step, it was going to be 10 to 15 just to get started, and we've got 90 people in our HOA, trying to get those 90 people together is an absolute nightmare. It took us a year to get the 3,000. But my issue really is to ask the question if there's any advice as to how to get rid of a developer who will not leave. He's been there 6 years. We've surpassed the 50% mark, which under 47C3 speaks of at 50% we should have two people or not less than 33% on the board, and that's never happened. Any advice?
Oh, so your condos? Your condominiums?
Yes.
Well, I've got some advice for you, but I don't think it's what you want to hear. You're right. The condominium law does have a provision for a transition where homeowners are appointed to the board.
Mm-hmm.
But if the developer's refusing to do that, you do need to engage legal counsel.
Yeah, well, we did that. So I've got court on Friday trying to get in front of a Superior Court judge.
Well, good luck to you, Brian, and thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Let me read an email here from Robert, who says, to get to the human side of this HOA question, a quick anecdote. I was president of a large HOA in Florida. Here's what I learned. One, HOAs are indeed like small cities with laws, police powers, elections, taxes, and borders. Because they are so localized, HOAs require the highest ideals of democracy to work. Almost no one is equipped for this. many people choose not to participate in their HOA at all unless it does something they object to. Some treat volunteer leaders as people they can scream at and accuse of fraud, forgetting that they are also their neighbors. For these reasons, which have to do with our views and attitudes regarding cooperative democracy, HOAs are doomed to be pits of conflict and rancor. Bullies, commandos, lawyers, and association management companies move in where pure local democracy fails. You're nodding in agreement, Jim.
I'm absolutely nodding in agreement. We have offered to the Charlotte Observer to write a series of investigative reports. We've offered to the legislature to do so, and we would love to do so. This is just, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg.
And because Frank writes, this is as close to communism as I want to get, I ask you in 40 seconds or less, what is your proposed solution about again?
Our proposed solution to the legislature is to assign a task force of homeowners, attorneys, property management companies, HOA board members, real estate commission, insurance commission, and to let us all come together instead of continuing this dialogue. Communism is a pretty drastic word.
What is the likelihood of that happening?
We're petitioning. We're working with the legislature. Our website, nchoalaws.org, we can do it. So we want to work together.
You see that as a pretty good solution very quickly, Dr. Swindell?
We go back to the democracy thing. If people aren't participating, you're not going to get these kinds of changes.
Okay. Dr. David Swindell, Associate Professor of Public Policy at UNC Charlotte, and John Stone, President and CEO of Community Association Services, Jim Lane, the founder of NCHOA Laws Coalition. Thank you all for the hour.